I'm Carrie Nolan. It's Monday, March 18th, and time for WQXR's Washington Report Online. Joining us now, as he does every week, is David Sanger, Chief Washington Correspondent for The New York Times. Good morning, David.
Morning, Carrie.
David, tension is up on the Korean Peninsula. The North Koreans scrapped the 60-year armistice that ended the Korean War and threatened a preemptive nuclear strike against the U.S. Last week, Chuck Hagel announced that the U.S. would spend $1 billion expanding its missile defense sites in Alaska and California.
The United States has missile defense systems in place to protect us from limited ICBM attacks, but North Korea in particular has recently made advances in its capabilities and is engaged in a series of irresponsible and reckless provocations.
How reliable is that missile defense system, and will it deter the North Koreans?
Well, it's not very reliable, Kerry, but it may not need to be. In tests against dummy warheads, it's hit about half of them, which is not a fabulous rate. But on the other hand, the North Koreans do not have a very accurate missile system, and they have never shown that they can reach the United States. So we're all talking about theoreticals here. What's this deterrence all about? It's about trying to convince the Chinese that they really need to step on North Korea, which has long been their ward, and stop the kind of activity and threats that you've seen. And the way they're convincing the Chinese of this is to make it clear that the United States will not only bolster its anti-missile defenses, which the Chinese don't care for, but also put more forces into the Pacific. And the question is, do the Chinese have this kind of influence over North Korea that many believe they should?
China is also criticizing the U.S. for bolstering its missile defense. A Chinese foreign ministry spokesman told a daily news briefing that the missile plan will have a direct bearing on, quote, global and regional balance. Now, is this a warning from the Chinese?
You know, I'm not sure it is. Nobody expected that the Chinese would like this kind of buildup. But on the other hand, if President Obama was trying to send a message to the new Chinese leadership, that statement may indicate that he's being successful.
Shifting from one conflict zone to another, it was 10 years ago tomorrow that President Bush announced the invasion of Iraq, a war of necessity, he argued at the time.
The people of the United States and our friends and allies will not live at the mercy of an outlaw regime that threatens the peace with weapons of mass murder. We will meet that threat now.
Today we're out of Iraq, but how does the legacy of that decision affect the question of when and how to intervene overseas?
You know, Carrie, it hangs over every debate in Washington about when to go into Libya in 2011 and now whether and how to aid the rebels in Syria. President Obama has been very cautious. He's not wanted to put any troops on the ground, and I think there's a lot of fear of a repeat of the Iraq experience. But there are also some, even inside the Obama administration, who worry that the lessons have been overlearned and that, in fact, it has kept the United States on the sidelines too long in Syria while 60,000 or more people have been slaughtered by their own government. So the question now is there a middle way? Is there a way to arm rebels without sending in American troops? Is there a way to get more involved without trying to rewire a society the way we tried and failed in Iraq?
Finally, David, one of the criticisms lobbed at President Obama is that he's not been a strong supporter of Israel. Now, he's headed there this week as part of a larger trip to the Middle East, and it's his first trip as president to Israel. So what can we expect?
You know, Carrie, I can't think of a trip where there have been lower expectations before a president has gone. While the two countries have been sewn up pretty closely on Iran, there are clearly still big differences between President Obama and Prime Minister Netanyahu about how close to a bomb the Iranians would be allowed to get. And on settlements, there's been very little progress, nor has there been much progress on starting up negotiations with the Palestinians. I think there is a sense in Washington, though certainly not at the White House, that this is a little bit of a check-the-box trip for the president, that he feels as if he needs to go to Israel, but he does not believe that there's a great moment here for progress. And that's going to be hard territory for him to navigate. The thing to watch is his big speech, which he'll be giving to students at the university, that may give us some hint of what the second-term peace process could look like.
Thanks a lot, David.
Thank you.
New York Times Chief Washington Correspondent David Sanger. I'm Carrie Nolan, and that's the Washington Report on Classical 105.9 FM, WQXR.